Yeah, well, it almost needs no introduction, does it? The theme to the Three Stooges. That just makes you laugh listening to it. They were active, can you believe it, from 1922 up until 1970. But best remembered for the 190-odd short films that they did with Columbia Pictures. Now, actually, when we talk about the Three Stooges, there really were six. And they appeared over the run. Three were active at any given time. Moe Shemp and Curly were brothers. Now, the other three being Larry Fine, Joe Besser, and later Curly Joe Derita. Now, the act actually began in the early 1920s. And this was part of a vaudeville comedy act that was billed as Ted Healy and his Stooges. Ted being an entertainer and comedy leader, and the Stooges were part of the act. But by 1934, after appearing in a bunch of movies, they left Healy and signed on to appear in their own short subject comedies for Columbia. That's when they were billed as the Three Stooges. Well, as they say, the rest is history. I guess you'd say for Columbia, their first success, break, whatever, came on this day back in 1934. And they were reportedly paid $1,000 between the three of them for their first effort for Columbia, The Woman Haters.
Fellas, I'll have to quit that club I joined last week.
Quit the club?
That's what I said.
Oh, you big fathead, what do you mean?
This way, I met a beautiful girl and fell head over heels in love.
Why, you must be out of your mind.
You're crazy.
What are you thinking of?
But I promised to marry her tonight.
Tonight? Down with the traitors of the Woman Haters Club.
Fellas, you convinced me. I guess that you're right. I'll have to call the wedding off. I'll tell her tonight.
That's fine, but how can we be certain? You won't give us a double cross.
I'll put up my bankroll. If I miss, I'll take the loss.
I got a better idea than that. I'll tell you what let's do. Jackie, me and you, put up our bankrolls, too. We'll sign an agreement that we three will stick together for life and never even look at a girl and never take a wife.
And on it went. Great stuff. Well, I thought we'd go to Stooge headquarters, which these days is based at Ambler, Pennsylvania. Michelle Squissamara is there at the Stoogeum, as it's I love it, as it's known, Three Stooges Museum to you and me. She's on the line. Michelle, good morning, our time to you.
Good morning to you too.
Wonderful stuff, the Three Stooges. Tell me, before we start, of course, they made their money, they were a success over in California, in Hollywood, but you're there based in Pennsylvania. Is there a connection with the Stooges in Pennsylvania?
Yes, there is a connection to Pennsylvania. Our executive director is a gentleman named Gary Lassen. He is the Three Stooges fan club president. He took over the operation in 1986 from his grandfather-in-law, Moe Feinberg, who is Larry Fine's youngest brother. So Larry is from Philadelphia. He was born at 3rd and South Street in Philadelphia, and Ambler is about 40 minutes away from Center City, Philadelphia.
How about that? Well, there you go. That explains that. And if someone was to go to the Stoogeum today, I suppose they're going to see a lot of memorabilia, right?
They would see a lot of memorabilia. We are the location of the world's largest collection of Three Stooges memorabilia in North America. We have about 100,000 items in the collection. Jeez. About a tenth of that is on display. Unfortunately, we are closed to the public right now, but we are still doing some behind-the-scenes work while the museum is closed for COVID precautions.
Sure. 100,000 items. That's amazing. I mean, look, for those that aren't completely across all the details of the Three Stooges, 100,000 items. I mean, what sort of stuff you got? You got costumes, scripts? What is it that you've got?
We have some costumes. We have some set pieces. Not a lot of set pieces. The way it went was when the Columbia shorts were filmed, they were all done on the Columbia lot. And basically, you have to be like a demigod to get onto the Columbia lot to see these sets and these costumes. So some things come to market, some things don't. We have a collection of about 14,000 photographs. We have an archive, a research library. We have posters, lobby cards, toys and games from the 30s up to the present. It's anything you could possibly imagine and some things that you can't. It's all here at the Stoogeum.
Do you have an opportunity for people to poke each other in the eye, hit themselves in the head with fake hammers and this?
We do actually have a hammer that was used in a Life magazine photo shoot that the Stooges did in 1959, but we do ask that people keep their hands to themselves while they're at the museum.
Quite wise, COVID or not. All right, let's look at their history because this is fascinating. As I said, we got Mo, Shemp and Curly. They're the three brothers, which are the Horowitz brothers.
Correct.
They create an anglicised name in Howard. So how did their collective genius come together and say, all right, we're going to be a comedy act?
So Ted Healy started the act around in the 1920s. Shemp and Mo were childhood friends of his. He would summer in New York, and they met as teenagers, and they would do comedy acts, like, you know, on the street, on some theaters. They drew an interesting figure. Healy was very, very tall and thin, and Shemp and Mo were very, very short, but they were physical comedians, so they drew a lot of attention. In 1928, they found Larry Fine, and he joined the act, and they performed throughout the country as all kinds of names. They were Ted Healy, Southern Gentlemen, the Racketeers, the Three Lost Souls. They were billed many, many different ways. When they eventually headed to Hollywood, Shemp left the act. He went to perform on his own, and he was a movie star in his own right. He worked in many, many studios in the 1930s, namely Vitaphone, that was based in New York. And eventually, he was replaced by his youngest brother, Curly, who's also known as Jerry. Mm-hmm. Then eventually, Mo, Larry, and Curly, with Ted Healy, signed a film contract with MGM. That worked out for a couple of years. And then, like you said, then 1934, they signed on with Columbia Pictures, where that contract that they signed in 1934 was the same contract they signed every year until 1957.
Well, there's a story there, isn't there? Because the bloke behind Columbia, Cohn, he was notoriously tight with the coin, wasn't he? And so, I mean, you would have thought these were super. I mean, we've got to remember, these three were superstars in their day. And, in fact, their shorts were often attached to the feature film, as it were, because that was what was getting bums on seats in the cinema. But arguably, they never really got the financial recognition that they deserved for their talent.
So I would say that they made their comfortable living doing what they did best, which was physical comedy in front of people. They traveled across the country many, many, many times a year, and they were able to fill theaters and supper clubs and nightclubs all across the country. So I think that the deal was Harry Cohn never let them learn just how popular their movies were. And, of course, they became more popular once they were available to watch on television. And then they're introduced to a brand new audience starting in 1959.
Now, you mentioned television. That was almost a renaissance for them, wasn't it? Because it introduced...
Oh, absolutely.
Introduced, or maybe even, I suppose, reintroduced them to audiences that may have remembered them on the movies, but of course it's not like today where we've got everything on demand and whatnot. You saw the film and that was it. And then along comes television and they come back into people's lives.
Yeah, that's actually one of the very interesting things about working in a Three Stooges museum is that I talked to many, many people who had no idea that you could ever see a Three Stooges movie in a movie theater. They had only ever seen it on television. And then there are the people who saw them in the theaters in like the 30s or the 40s, and they had never seen them again until they happened to catch it on television as a much older adult or even in the theater at the Stoogeum.
Yeah, I mean, that was something, wasn't it? When the TV came, they could, as you said, they could make a lot of money outside. Their contract never stopped them privately profiteering from their fame outside of Columbia. And so, as you said, they do the supper clubs, they do all sorts of acts, and they could charge pretty well for that, couldn't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, now let's look at some of their interesting history along the way. Of course, it wasn't all happy days, and Curly suffered a debilitating stroke fairly early on. That was in May of 46, and so that brought Shemp back, didn't it?
That's correct. Curly was in poor health in the mid-1940s, and he was replaced by Shemp, who at that time had just come off of a two-reel series of his own at Columbia, where he was the star of the show the same way the Three Stooges were the stars of their show. And Shemp, what I think he did 78 Columbia shorts, and then he passed away suddenly in 1955. And he was replaced by another Columbia comedian, Joe Besser, who was very well known for being a Broadway performer as a part of Ole and Johnson's their act that it started in vaudeville and then hit the Broadway stage, and some of their acts eventually became movies like Hell's a Poppin'.
Yeah, the mainstays throughout there were Moe Howard and Larry Fine. I mean, they were almost there the whole 50 years, I think.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Moe and Larry were together forever, basically.
Which is extraordinary, as you said earlier. I mean, these were physical comedians. They weren't just delivering one-liners. There was a lot of physicality involved, fast slapstick and all
that. Oh, sure.
I mean, that took some effort, over 50 years.
Yeah, I mean, forever is a pretty long time, so
yeah.
They absolutely put their heart, body, and souls on the line for quite a bit of years.
Like I said, Larry, like all people, but Larry eventually died in January of 1975. He had a series of strokes, and that was it. And then there was an attempt to try to keep it going somehow, but look, when Moe Howard died on May 4, 1975, the magic really was over, and no one's ever been able to really replicate it since, have they?
No, that's actually very funny. I was just talking about this the other night, that the Three Stooges, their comedic legacy has reached many, many decades, and there hasn't been an act like them in the intervening, 50 years.
So what was the secret to their success? Because, as I said, in this day and age, there'd be many people listening to us now that certainly binged on TV. They would have even seen them in the movies, perhaps, but there hasn't been something really like it for a while, and yet they remain, in a cult-like way, classic and popular. What set them apart from others who were obviously trying to do the same thing at the same time?
I think their secret is adaptability and changing audiences, that they were always respectful of the audiences that were most interested in them at the time. So in the 1930s and 1940s, I'm talking that they're performing in nightclubs and supper clubs. They're not a children's act. They're for grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
So their act was, it was never blue, but it was kind of bawdy, that it was not nightclubs were not a place for children. So eventually the children are seeing them in the movie theaters. They have toys for children in the height of their popularity. But as the two-reeler programs become less and less popular and the shorts are being packaged for television, they reach a whole new audience. And instead of saying, well, we're for grown-ups and this, we're a more serious, comedic output, we are for children. And they met the kids where they were, which is, afternoon matinees or early evening supper clubs. So they're reaching their former children who now have children of their own.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think that being able to adapt to your audience and where they are at that very point in history really makes a difference for maintaining their comedic legacy.
Well, it's a wonderful legacy. Well, I think we'll get a couple of calls now from people who've enjoyed them and will reminisce about their favourite movie or their favourite short or their favourite Three Stooge or the favourite stunt or whatever. So we'll have a bit of fun. Michelle, wonderful to talk to you. And that Stoogium, well, when everything reopens again, hopefully people can get over to Pennsylvania and check it out.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Some Australian Three Stooges fans. Yes.
Excellent.
Good on you, Michelle. Thank you for your time. Lovely to talk with you.
All right, you have a good one now. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. There she is, Michelle Squisimara there at the Stoogium in Pennsylvania. Anyway, all right, so over to you, you Three Stooges fans. Give us a buzz. 131-873. What was your favourite Three Stooges movie? Who was your favourite Stooge and why? I was talking to Dale, who loves all things media and whatever. He told me before I spoke there to Michelle that in later years, when they were adapting these sort of things for different audiences, there had to be scenes from different Three Stooges acts taken out scenes where, yeah, people would be plonked on the head with a hammer and all this. Because the fear was that kids these days would actually hit a real person over the head with a real hammer, you know, which obviously didn't occur to kids in the 1960s, who obviously had the intelligence to realise it was all a bit of fun. But in this sort of censorious age, they started taking, can you believe it, scenes out from The Three Stooges for modern audiences because of, you know, violence. Or anyway, the world has gone mad in more ways than one. But anyway, if you love The Three Stooges, I remember my dad, he'd often get up quite early, and, you know, as a kid you'd get up and the TV would be, he'd be out there watching the TV with some toast and a coffee. And, the Three Stooges are going, all this sort of nonsense. What's this rubbish? But as you get older, you see it, you can't help but laugh. And in times like this, we need that more than ever, I suppose. Yeah, and good point that Michelle made. Yeah, no swear words, no overt smut, just clever, slapstick, physical farce. In many respects, they were geniuses. 131 873.